First to some constructive moves in the face of a Pacific disaster that's rolling on. In the mid-1990s, the world's heaviest monarch, King Tupou IV of Tonga, who'd tipped the scales at over 200 kilos in the 70s, spearheaded a health and weight awareness program to address the epidemic of obesity in his kingdom. And it was a great success. Tongans became much more aware of the risks associated with obesity. The king himself shed about a third of his record-breaking weight. 20 years on, the message about health and weight awareness seems to have been forgotten. Tonga is now the most obese country in the world. Life expectancy is actually falling. Amid very real concerns about the impact of having such an overweight population, the government's again getting serious about tackling the epidemic. Next week, King Tupou IV's grandson, King Tupou VI of Tonga, will open the first ever high-level summit on tackling non-communicable diseases in the Pacific region. It's a collaboration between the government of Tonga and the Pacific Community, the principal development organisation in the region. And Dr. Colin Tukui Tonga is the Director General of that community. I'd like to welcome him now. Good morning.
Well, thank you.
The summit's primary aim, I understand, Dr. Tukui Tonga, is to discuss ways of better tackling the crisis of non-communicable diseases in the Pacific. Now, when do you say this crisis start, and what's the scale of it at the moment?
Well, the scale, if I could answer that first, would be described as phenomenal. It causes these conditions, diabetes, heart disease and so on, causes 3 out of every 4 deaths in the region. The risk factors, poor diet, smoking and so on, continues to increase across all the islands. And we are not making the kind of impact that we need to make in terms of control and prevention of these conditions. So that's, the extent of it. It's the leading cause of death in this part of the world and the leading cause of hospitalisation, leg amputations, blindness, kidney failures and so on.
Dear, oh dear. Yes, 75% is what I've been given of deaths attributable to NCDs across the Pacific. And I wonder, one interesting little note I've got is that it started around about the mid the 20th century when imports of fatty meat offcuts began arriving in the Pacific Islands from the US and New Zealand. Is that right?
Well, most people would agree that the occurrence of diabetes and heart disease is a recent phenomenon, and certainly the work in Nauru around the time when Nauru had a lot of money showed that this was a recent phenomenon. And it's escalated, of course, corresponding to increases imports of processed foods, of flour and rice and tinned stuff.
Mm. And soft drinks and so on.
Soft drinks and so on, yes. So the agreement is that it's relatively recent.
With luck, it can be turned around then. I mean, we're talking about the whole of the Pacific region, which is 26 countries and territories. Are some places doing better than others?
Well, we've seen some progress in Samoa and the reduction of the prevalence of people who smoke in that country, similar trends in Tonga. But, you know, overall it's disappointing. Young people, children and young people continue to get bigger. And indeed, the adult population continued to show the same sort of trend. Smoking overall in and around the region remains high. Diet getting worse and reduced levels of physical activity. If you like, the combination of all of these things continuing to fuel the occurrence of obesity and diabetes.
And why the drop in physical activity?
Oh, too much of a good thing, one could say. Watching television, using mechanized transport, you know, moving away from paddling a canoe to using an outboard, you know, the usual story that, you know, we're trying to make life easier for everyone. But this is, I guess, one of the unintended consequences of a good life, if you like.
I gather the tradition of feasting is quite something too, and that there is a cultural appreciation of bigger bodies as beautiful. I wonder if you feel that that's also playing into it.
Oh, it's been presented. There's no doubt about it. The view that Pacific people prefer, you know, that big is beautiful, that's certainly a view that's being presented. But I think it's important to also point out that people now recognize that that body size is not necessarily equated with beauty, and there are certain and definite risks to health, like diabetes and heart disease.
And some scientists believe that the Pacific Islanders in the past had to survive long periods without food so that their bodies may be programmed, in the interim anyway, to cling to fats. Do you accord with that?
This is the thrifty genotype proposed by a scientist called Neil in the 70s, and it still pops up now and then that the Pacific body, if you like, the genotype, the structure and the genetic makeup is programmed for living on small islands where you might have to go for long periods of time without food. And so you learn, your body learns to store as much fat as possible, because when there's a famine or you're marooned on an island, you can use your body reserves to survive. The problem these days, of course, is those feast-famine scenarios is no longer the case. You just wander down to the local shop and buy as much rice to last your family for several months. That's a theory, but I think most scientists now would say there may be a small genetic contribution, but this is largely environmental, what people eat, people not doing as much exercise and so on. So it's more to do with environmental factors, and some people would talk about what's called an obesogenic environment. Our lifestyles have become programmed, if you like, to put at us at greater risk of obesity. You sit down and you watch TV and you eat highly processed, fatty, salty food and drink copious amounts of sugar-laden drinks.
Well, in fact, in the past at these big feasts, I gather you would have had, say, fish and taro and coconut, but now you've got, as you say, the white rice and the mutton and the chicken and so on. So, gee whiz, I wonder where you start in trying to turn around some of these behavioural attitudes.
That's the meeting in Tonga, because there's clearly lots of these declarations from the UN to the World Health Organization to the region, but somehow they're not being translated into impacts that we want to see on the ground. So the question is, what can we do to make the change? Some would say, of course, maybe you should forget about the adult population. Bad habits were established a long time ago. We should put our limited resources and energy into educating and growing a new generation of young people. And there are those who say you should start before women get pregnant about their nutritional status and healthy weight during pregnancy, breastfeeding immediately following birth, careful use of weaning foods. In other words, start to nurture a whole new generation, and I guess forget about the rest of us probably a bit too late. It's clearly a very difficult challenge, and this is why we are delighted that everyone, that a lot of people are coming to Tonga so we can share ideas. The World Diabetes Federation is there in force, and we've got Ms. Helen Clark, of course, talking from a development point of view, because the problem now is young people, 40s and 50s, you know, sick with one NCD or another and can't work. So it has a whole lot of ramifications. It's not just a personal and family health issue.
Dare I ask you whether you have followed your own advice then? I mean, are you happy with the weight you are and the amount of exercise or movement you do?
Yeah, on the standard scientific scale, I'm on the upper side of a healthy weight. I'm lucky, I think, because I'm reasonably tall. I could do with more hair, but I don't think that's a
risk
factor.
I don't think that's the issue. No, so why I ask is that obviously models of good behaviour are going to have to be introduced, which behaviour change, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. But the point is that, you know, we want to make this popular across the whole of the village, the whole of society. You know, it's not just a small select group of highly visible people, but to try and engender in the community better eating habits, to grow and eat more locally produced and try to limit the consumption of imported processed foods. The fact is, if you look at Tonga and Fiji, they import half of what they eat, when in fact there's sufficient land and opportunity and capability to grow more and consume more.
Well, so, it may be the exporters, like Australia, New Zealand and the US and the multinationals, who will have a bit of money at stake here. What's been the experience of Pacific nations trying to stand up to these people?
Yeah, and Fiji and Samoa and others have tried to do this. The problem, of course, you get caught up in the WTO rules where you can't discriminate against products from outside the region, from local products, and it gets all very, very complicated. Clearly, trade is an issue that has an impact on this, and it's already part of the agenda. Can we think about a more selective, a more careful approach to what gets traded? Because part of the problem with this, of course, is free trade is the sort of in thing for everybody, and you just trade whoever wants it can get it kind of thing. So there is this talk about safe trade, if you like, or more care taken around some of the things that perhaps are less desirable.
Okay. There is what about, say, import bans or quotas or raising taxes?
But that's the issue with the WTO, because you're not supposed to do that. But some would say, well, it's really up to the countries at the receiving end to price it in such a way that if you don't want people consuming turkey tails, mm-hmm. you put a big tax on it so it becomes price prohibitive.
Then there are those who say, you've got to cope with the domestic political pressure of doing that.
Yeah, then there's those who say mm-hmm. we have no right to do that because people have free choice and they should be allowed to do whatever it is they want. And of course, the makers of these things would say it's our job, you know, it's not really our job to screen out what people do and don't eat. We just put it out there and people should be free enough to make their own choices. And that's an argument that has some value at some point. But the problem we have now is children and young people are increasingly overweight and obese, and they don't have a lot of choice often. Mm. They get given, they eat what they're given. And so that's a real issue for people to think about.
Well, it'd be prudent, wouldn't it? Just your simple business of how you divide your limited cake in terms of treating people. By the sound of it, it's swallowing up an enormous amount of the health budget.
And it's going to get worse. I mean, without being dramatic, the small, fragile health systems of the region won't cope. We know, for example, that it costs $30,000 to dialyze, to put someone on dialysis. Most of those people are dead in 2 years. And so you have to think about how best to use the resources of the country. One person on insulin in one of the Pacific Island countries for a year will blow the drug budget for that country. So, you know, there's been a lot of work done on these things. Unfortunately, somehow we've got to get people to appreciate what this actually means, because when these things get thrown around, it becomes a bit of a story and people go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's no exaggeration that I think the health systems in the region, the problem is this is a new phenomenon, the full consequences of the complications we haven't seen yet. So if you like, we're still on the rising side of the potential impact of NCDs on health systems.
Well, good luck for your conference, and I think a lot of us might follow the results a little bit more than we would have without your advice. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Colin Tukuitonga, he's Director General of the Pacific Community, and that conference starts next week.